I think in the 1990s, early 2000s, during kind of the height of the information age, information was really taken as a representation of fact. Now, it's taken as mediated representation. So I think the notion of information has shifted. It's seen as a problem of interpretation. And more than that, the construction of meaning.
You are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show. I'm Charlie Bennett in the studio with Wendy. It's us. Each week on Lost in the Stacks, we pick a theme and then use it to create a mix of music and library talk. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
Our show today is called All Data Are Local.
Wendy, I got hit by the AB button, so you get to start again.
Called All Data Are Local. And I guess that's the first thing we have to do is address the plural noun in the title.
Yes, once I fix the board, now I can say it's easy to get tired of people saying one point is a datum, many are data, but this is where the peas meet the corn, folks.
In this information age, we use data to understand our world, and so we should know what they are.
Data are multiple. Data are created, and we need to talk about how we think about them. So we're going to talk to Yanni Loukisas, Georgia Tech professor and the author of the book, All Data Are Local, published this year by MIT Press.
If you want to join the conversation, the hashtag for this show is LITS429 for Lost in the Stacks episode 429. Please feel free to tweet your thoughts, questions, or arguments against the plural noun with that hashtag.
We'll probably agree with all of those arguments. Our songs today are about understanding motivations, attachment to place, and recognizing how we have misunderstood things in our life. One of the big data misunderstandings is the idea that data exists like the natural world and then are discovered. That's not how data works. Data are made. They are practically objects. So let's begin the show with Objects by Marbled Eye, right here on Lost in the Stacks.
That was Objects by Marbled Eye. Today's show on Lost in the Stacks is called All Data Are Local, and our guest is Yanni Loukisas, Assistant Professor of Digital Media in the School of Literature, Media, and Communication here at Georgia Tech. So Yanni's book, All Data Are Local, Thinking Critically in a Data-Driven Society, came out in April of this year from MIT Press. We're excited to talk about it. Welcome back to the show, Yanni.
Thanks. I'm really glad to be here.
So we should start with, what are you doing writing a book about data? When I looked at your courses and your background, you seem to be a design and representation scholar. You know, there's architecture and there's a visual design and all that. So how did you get to writing this particular book about data and how we think critically about it?
That's a good question. And I would start by saying I conceive my research and teaching broadly as being about helping creative people think critically about emerging technologies. And I've been doing that for quite a while and in different forms. I wrote a book before this called Co-Designers, Cultures of Computer Simulation in Architecture. It's really trying to help architects and engineers rethink how they're defining themselves and their professional identities in relationship to some of the new tools for our modeling and simulation that had kind of entered their work practice. And so today, with everyone grappling to try to use data to kind of gain an edge for themselves professionally, it seemed in a way like an obvious next step to move from modeling and simulation to data and looking at how should we think about data and the way it's used in creative professional settings. So the book still has a focus, I would think, on these kinds of what I'd call creative professional settings. And that includes architects and engineers, but also other new kinds of creatives, people working in journalism, creative people working in libraries and information systems, and a broad range of others.
I'm curious, what drew you to architecture? And, you know, you've written about architects, but you've also trained as an architect.
Yeah, so I got my start as an architect, and I think sometimes, I'd like to say I'm a recovering architect. I was really encouraged to enter architecture by my father, who studied architecture but never practiced it. And he always told me I had the personality of an architect, which I'm not quite sure. I never quite came to terms with.
Isn't that a black turtleneck and a New York apartment? Isn't that what that means?
I think he was referring to my perfectionism. But I studied architecture as an undergrad, and it's an intense 5-year professional program in architecture that they have in this country. And you really emerge with certain sensibilities. And I think one of the sensibilities that, even though I don't do a lot of work in architecture these days, that has really carried over is caring about and celebrating the importance of context. Most buildings are one-off. They're designed for a specific site. And particularly in my education, we saw the site as generating or helping to generate the building. And what I always found strange about digital media and data specifically is that there's a kind of agnosticism to the importance of place and context and locality when we talk about digital media. And this goes back to like Marshall McLuhan, who said that the digital or electronic media were going to collapse space and time, and so they weren't going to be important, to people like Nicholas Negroponte, who was originally an architect, but insisted that place was going to matter less and less as we became digital, to the point that we could actually transfer places from one space to another. And I think that has caused a lot of problems. I think this idea that place no longer matters and we can do anything from anywhere, is also an attempt to erase a kind of erase difference, which is important, and diversity. And so in the work that I do and in my writing in the book, I'm really trying to encourage the return of or the celebration and the preservation in some respects of diversity in digital practice and in practices with data.
So if I can make a huge generalization, in a way you're thinking of how a building that's designed without looking at the site at all won't work in that place, won't work the way it could. And data that we don't consider the place that it was built or created, that's not as useful as it would be if we thought about place.
Well, here's another way to frame it,
yes.
Which is very similar, because I think this is a helpful analogy. Imagine that you took a building, you plucked a building out of its original location, and you try to just set it down somewhere else. And actually, this happens quite a bit.
Yes, both it does.
Literally and through influence, the kind of influence of style and so forth. But if you suddenly encounter this building without any understanding anything about where it came from originally, you'd probably be really confused about why it looked the way it did, because it was responding to certain contextual features, things in its environment, maybe even just its relationship to the sun or the wind or views. Because once you took that building out, maybe the fact that a window is looking out in this direction doesn't make sense anymore. And I think the same thing is true with data. We expect to kind of take these data sets and extract them from their original locations or sources, and for them to make sense seamlessly in new places, without thinking about how the context, how the setting, I like to say, of the data's creation helped to shape it, to look in a certain way. And often our response to it is just to think that the data set is dirty and needs to be cleaned up. And this is really interesting terminology we use, because Mary Douglas, the anthropologist, says that there's no such thing as dirt in a absolute sense. Dirt is just matter out of place. That's what she calls it. So, you know, if a leaf is, if you walk outside your house and there's some leaves or, you know, twigs on the ground, that's not dirt. It's part of your yard. But if that's inside, it's dirt. So this stuff that we think has to be cleaned out of data sets is really just data out of place. And so I think, you know, this way of thinking about the relationship between data and context, I think, is important.
I feel like we just stumbled into a material oomph show. We'll have to hold that for another episode. This is Lost in the Stacks, and we'll be back with more from Yanni after a music set. And you can file that set under BF683J86.
That was Flowchart by Superette, and before that, Super Soaked by Be Your Own Pet. Songs about understanding how the world works.
This is Lost in the Stacks, and our show today is called All Data Are Local. We're speaking with Yanni Loukisas, professor of digital media here at Georgia Tech, and the author of the book, All Data Are Local. All right, Yanni, I think I have a quote here that sums up at least one big chunk of the book, and we're going to see if we can get through it in one segment. Data are created by humans and their dutiful machines at a time, in a place, with the instruments at hand for audiences that are conditioned to receive them. Is that a summary of the book, or is that a summary of what you hope people will understand after they read the book?
It's a quote that comes right at the beginning of the book, and I think that it's kind of the starting point for the book. It's, if we assume this, where does that take us? How should we deal with data in various kinds of practices, whether it's data visualization, whether it's using data to train new algorithms, or whether it's using data to just make arguments and make claims. If we approach data knowing this, what are the implications? And that's really what the book is about.
Do you think that this is something that's widely understood, this whole conceptual package, or is this something that's challenging to folks?
So I think when I started writing the book, when I came to Georgia Tech about 5 years ago, I think this was a more controversial statement. Now, scholars in fields like science and technology studies have been talking about data and knowledge more broadly as local for a long time, for many decades. But I thought it was time to kind of bring this sentiment to practitioners and to other kinds of scholars who were increasingly, I saw, seeing data as just a new lens that they could bring to their subjects without really adopting a critical eye towards it. I think in the period since the book, since I first started writing the book, a lot has happened. And I think the public more generally has been alerted to what we might call the dark side of data, the dark side of big data, that data can be sexist, it can be racist, that data have all kinds of values and assumptions embedded within them that we need to be wary of. And so I think the book lands in a very different time. And I think in a way that's a good thing because, you know, I think people are more ready to, because the book is really about practice, and I think people are more ready to embrace these new kinds of practices, new kinds of models. Whereas, you know, because I was originally hesitant, or not hesitant, but worried maybe that the message of the book was coming a bit too late. You know, we have articles, all kinds of great journalists reporting on biases and data and so forth. And that's not necessarily new anymore. But I think we haven't really grappled with what to do about that. And so I think that's what the book really tries to do, and hopefully it will be useful to people in that respect.
in the book, you mention a little bit about sort of your socio-technical background or that orientation. And I'm curious to hear sort of what you think that means, and then how, you know, that might be sort of a theoretical approach, but how does that become a practice, a socio-technical practice, mindset?
Yeah, so this socio-technical practice notion really comes out of science and technology studies. And I think at the heart of it, the idea, you know, it's hyphenated. The idea is that the social and the technical are not ever separate. And that means that all technologies, all innovation happens within a social context. And all social relationships are mediated through technology. And I think for a long time, we've deluded ourselves into thinking it doesn't matter where our technologies are made. But it's not an accident that so much technological innovation happens in specific places like Silicon Valley. And we have to ask, you know, what are the values that are being developed in those places, and that this technology is not placeless. And when I say that, I'm talking about not only geography, but the social, the societal context in which those technologies are developed and the values they're trying to reproduce.
You said in the first segment that creative folks might use data to get an edge.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that connects to what you just said about things happening on purpose in places. But I don't know. So I'm going to try and push you to talk a little more about what the edge is.
Well, one of the things I wrote a lot about in my last book is about how professional identities, professional boundaries are never really stable. You know, I said that it started in architecture. And the thing about architecture, along with a lot of other professions, it likes to think of itself as having this long history. And that there's some, in some sense, there's something stable about what it means to be an architect that can be traced back to people like Michelangelo and Alberti and, you know, even beyond that. And the truth is that professions are always kind of redefining themselves in the context of new technologies and new kinds of social and political contexts in which they're operating. And so I think what's happening today is all of these professions, not just architecture, but a lot of professions, whether it's journalism, whether it's librarians, whether it's academics, they're trying to redefine who they are and what they do in the context of the new availability of data. And, you know, we like to say big data sometimes. Yeah. I'm not sure the lifespan of that term, but I think suffice it to say that we have a lot more data than we've ever had before. And there's this sense that somehow using the data alone or that the scale of the data is transformative. And professionals and practitioners want to experiment with how their jurisdictional boundaries might be transformed, extended, their power might be increased if they have access to data. And so all kinds of industries, companies, and practitioners are trying to do this. And so I see it as my job to think about what are the limitations to that? What are the potential pitfalls? As well as what are the opportunities? It's not as if I'm just playing the critic here also. I also am very interested in how we can engage new opportunities and potentials, but I think with a more realistic empirical understanding of what we mean by data. And if I have another second, I'll just to clarify, you know, maybe what I mean by data, I'd like to work back and forth between these two definitions. So one is from Christine Borgman at UCLA, who says that the question is not what are data, but when are data. And anything can become data if it's taken up as part of a claim, making a claim. So she gives the example of a collection of photographs you might find in your parents' attic is not necessarily data in a natural sense, but those photographs could become data if you started making claims about them. So she calls data alleged evidence. I think what that leaves out, though, is the aspiration that that evidence can travel. You can take it somewhere else and make, you can take that box of photographs somewhere else and still use it to make valid claims. And I think that understanding comes from another definition by a guy named Bruno Latour, who likes to call data immutable mobiles, meaning things that you can move without them changing. And so I kind of, you know, I think if you stick these two definitions together, maybe you get something like allegedly mobile evidence, you know, evidence that we like to think can move, but that's not always the case. Or we need to be conscious of what contextual understandings need to move with it.
We'll be back with Yanni Loukisis for more about data and their discontents on the left side of the hour.
I'm Matthew Battles of MetaLab at Harvard, and you are listening to Lost in Stack on WREK Atlanta.
Today's Lost in the Stacks is called All Data Are Local. I'm going to hand over the mid-show break to Professor Aaron Hanlon of Colby College.
Data, in Latin, it means things given, or that which is given. The first usage of the term data ported over from the Latin came in 1630. In a navigational tract to describe kind of the givens of a mathematical problem. So the term can be used in that sense to describe the givens of a mathematical problem as early as the 17th century. Data could also be used to refer to evidence from scripture. It was used frequently in theological writing. Data, in that sense, you don't really contest the scripture, you don't really contest the word of God, right? So it's given in that sense. And it can even be used as early as the turn of the 18th century to begin to describe the fruits of empirical observation or scientific experimentations. So you get a real range of applications of the term. The term data doesn't begin to take on the way we use it today to refer to the fruits of experimentation, primarily in numerical form, until the late 18th century, beginning of the 19th century.
You can file this set under BF353.W37.
That was Our House by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Before that, Plant Life by Family Fodder. And we started off with Take Me Home, Country Roads by John Denver. Songs about attachments to place. Our show today is called All Data Are Local, a name we took from the book All Data Are Local, Thinking Critically in a Data-Driven Society, written by our guest, Professor Yanni Loukisis. So, Yanni, during the music set, we were talking a little bit about what this term data means, and you were talking about evidence. Can you talk a little bit about what evidence means to you and its value in today's world?
Sure. So I think we left off the last segment talking about data as alleged evidence and allegedly mobile evidence. And I think, you know, here in the university, it's our job to contemplate and continually debate, you know, what makes good evidence, because we can't make good claims without evidence. And so there are different kinds of evidence in different disciplines. And I think in my, in the book and in trying to convey this sense about the locality of data, I'm trying, you know, I think I, we should celebrate the diversity of different kinds of evidence that people have, whether it's qualitative or quantitative, whether it's experiential, whether it's known through experiment, whether it's known through kind of first-person exploration. A lot of the book is the story of my own kind of traversal through different data sets and my efforts to come to understand them and deal with them as evidence. So I spend time at the Arnold Arboretum in Boston dealing with evidence about plants, trees, vines, and shrubs that have grown there.
And that's a huge part of the book.
Yeah.
That's a great part of the book.
I spend time grappling with the Digital Public Library of America and the kinds of evidence and that libraries and museums and archives acquire and manage and help to curate. I spend time with the news and different ways that currently we're trying to make the news into data. And then finally, I spend a lot of time with housing data. And so I think just to come back to this idea of evidence, you know, there are many different ways of knowing in this world. And I think data don't serve just one way of knowing, and they can and should serve many different forms of knowledge. And the more we see data as kind of embedded in social relationships and in within kind of knowledge systems, the more we're aware that data are wedded to these different ways of knowing. And there is no, there's not just one kind of data.
And if I can try and pull this into libraries, one of the things you said made me think of how the library is filled with evidence of many kinds, be it data sets or books or just information, almost raw, taken from many different places. Mm-hmm. And one of the ideas that we have for the public library is that it's a place where people can learn about what they need to learn about to be able to, you know, participate mm-hmm. in the democracy. And the bigger a country gets or the more complicated it gets, the more that information comes from other places.
Mm-hmm.
And so giving maybe a library user a frame to remind themselves of how they're getting, you know, these yeah. resources, this information, and what they have to kind of not attenuate, but what they have to adjust in their understanding of it when they take it in might be a useful thing for for our broad audience.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things I write a bit about in the book is the importance of people like librarians, who are intermediaries, who are curators, who are caretakers of data, data systems, knowledge systems, and people, seeing people as important parts of these systems, that they can help us understand the context of data. They can help us use data effectively and ethically. And I think too often we assume we don't need people to help us understand data sets that are unfamiliar to us. And I think this goes back to kind of early ideas about kind of freeing data and information from the confines of libraries and from the confines of the kind of people who held the data. And there's a famous article called As We May Think by Vannevar Bush that you might know, written in The Atlantic just after the Second World War, when he imagines this kind of what we might think of as the first personal computer, but it's really like a mechanical desk that would kind of put information at your fingertips and in a way that is unencumbered by kind of clerical systems of organization that, you know, he thought were kind of getting in the way of having true access to information. And I think this idea is deeply flawed and I think has continued to kind of haunt the way we think about what we do on the internet, that somehow on the internet we get access to information by getting people out of the way. And the truth is there's a lot of invisible work that happens on the internet in shaping that information. So it's not as if it's objective information. And we've displaced a lot of the people who are important in helping us to understand and make sense of that information, whether they're journalists or librarians or other kinds of intermediaries.
You know, I think now that we've got this little bit of an argument that Amit can use as to why he hates the internet so much, this is a good place to end. This is Lost in the Stacks. Our guest is Yanni Loukisas, Assistant Professor of Digital Media in the School of Literature, Media, and Communication here at Georgia Tech. Yanni's book, All Data Are Local, Thinking Critically in a Data-Driven Society, was published this year by MIT Press. Yanni, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
We're going to finish with a music set. File this set under ND673.M35F6813.
No Big Thing by Holly Golightly. And before that, This Is Not a Photograph by Mission of Burma. Songs about seeing that things aren't what you thought they were.
Our show today was called All Data Are Local. And I'm turning once again to Professor Aaron Hanlon to sum this up for us.
Data is always, always influenced by its modes of methods of collection, always influenced by the contexts in which it's presented, by the rhetorical methods by which it's presented. In other words, this idea of kind of raw data or data that transcends any kind of political or ideological bent is a dangerous way of thinking about data.
All right, let's roll those credits. Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library. Produced by me, Charlie Bennett, Amit Doshi, Wendy Hagenmeyer, and Fred Rasko.
Charlie was also our engineer today.
Hello.
And the show was brought to you in part by the Library Collective, which is currently taking session proposals for next year's conference. You can find out more at thelibrarycollective.org.
Legal counsel and a whole set of dutiful machines were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia.
Special thanks to Yanni for being on the show, to Aaron Hanlon and Ronald Day for their sound bites about data, and thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
Find us online at lostinthestacks.org, and you can subscribe to our podcast pretty much anywhere you get your audio fix.
Next week on Lost in the Stacks, we move from data to metadata. Metadata in a material world, in fact.
I'm going to play Madonna again. Time for our last song today. We've been talking about how people make data for their own purposes. And then it seems we treat data like an authoritative description of the world and make decisions based on that data. The data we make become what makes us, and the next thing you know, we don't know what came first.
Wait, are you saying we don't know who made who?
Oh, that's exactly what I'm saying. And in fact, let's let AC/DC ask that very question right here on Lost in the Stacks. Have a great weekend, everybody.